At this point in the class, hopefully it's clear how the Jungian material that you're reading, the three chapters in Man and His Symbols, fits into a class in religious studies and fits into this class in particular. But it might not be, but I hope it is. So at the risk of repeating myself, I may make some references to that throughout today's talk, which will be in a couple of parts. At one point, we'll stop and I'll cue up some sections in The Wizard of Oz that are going to reference some specific things that I want to talk about, which hopefully are going to make the connection between Jungian psychology and religious experience much more explicit. I mean, what I've been trying to show you so far is that the Jungians talk about the inner journey of an individual in a psychotherapeutic sense, but religious life is the collective inner journey of a society. And the same process that goes on for an individual could be understood as going on for a society or a culture. That's the main point. There's a parallelism. And this fits in very closely with the idea I've been sharing with you that the level of consciousness associated with the dreaming mind or the symbol-using mind is an analogic level of consciousness. The syllogism in Grass explains how that thinking goes. And from that point of view, what happens in the microcosm happens in the macrocosm, to use that kind of language, and the reverse. What happens in the individual happens in the collective individuals, because all the collective individuals are a bunch of individuals. It's not like the collectivity of a society is any more than a whole bunch of individuals. So the religious process for one person and for the society are the same. So there are several terms that you should be quite familiar with now that the Jungians use. Ego, which simply means I, the subject. It does usually have a certain connotation of the subject having the capacity to do things in the world and to be effective. But it just means I, the subject, me. So when you feel like I'm doing something, like I'm having a cup of coffee, the I that thinks I'm having a cup of coffee is the ego. Then they talk about the shadow. So we know what the shadow is. I'm not going to go into that in any really great detail. The shadow is the part of yourself that you've cut off and has usually been repressed and that you don't know very well. So one way of understanding the spiritual journey of an individual is the journey toward completeness. So you have to integrate the shadow. In the process, you encounter figures, dramatic figures that are male or female, and on the journey to religious realization, defined in whatever society you're part of, whatever culture you're part of, you encounter these figures in the mythic journey that you take in your inner life, as well as exteriorly, in an exterior sense. You encounter these figures also, and they're well known in mythology, and we're looking at some of them in the story of Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz, which is a nice story for us to look at because it cuts across everything. It's not specifically a Christian story or a Jewish story or anything else. It's just a popular story, but all these elements are in it. So in this case, the heroine's journey toward completeness, which is the self, the full person, requires dealing with the anima and the animus figures. The anima and the animus figures are both positive and negative. Okay, so when we go to the castle of the Wicked Witch, what are we seeing? That's going to be obvious. I'm not going to tell you. You know, who appears in the lavender, is it lavender or pink, the pink bubble that helps Dorothy out? Should be obvious. Well, I'll just say it, because then we'll cue up Dorothy and we'll see these representations. The negative anima is, of course, the Wicked Witch of the West. The negative animus is the first vision we have of the Wizard of Oz. Who are you to come here and bother me? You know, and it's like fire and all this scary stuff, right? So Dorothy and her companions meet these negative figures and are set a task. And this is very typical. If you read any mythology or any mythological story, you see this kind of thing over and over again. The task is set to the heroine or the hero, or set for the heroine or hero. In this case, both the negative anima and negative animus do it, because what happens? The Wicked Witch shows up in the sky, says, "Surrender, Dorothy." That's the reason that Dorothy gets in to see the wizard. Remember, she goes to the door and he says, "Oh, you're Dorothy." Not just because Dorothy has the ruby slippers on, but because the witch, with her sky writing, has said, "Surrender, Dorothy." So Dorothy gets in to see the wizard, who's another negative figure, in this case a negative animus figure, the male within, okay, who sets the task for her. The task which she has to overcome, you would think she had enough tasks to get to Oz, but she gets there and she gets the real task, okay. When she gets the real task, what is it? "Bring me the broomstick of the Wicked Witch of the West." And we're going to talk a lot at some point, either today or tomorrow, about the broomstick and what it represents. To foreshadow what it represents, is a broomstick is a tree. It's a stick. It's a tree. The tree of the true cross, the tree under which the Buddha is enlightened, the wand of Caduceus, which is the spinal cord with the snakes wrapped around it. This image shows up over and over and over again in religious stories. It's the axis of the world. It's the center point. It's the navel of the earth, on and on and on. Very important image. "Bring me the broomstick." So essentially the wizard, the negative animus, is saying to her, "You have to bring me the center point. You have to go to the center. You have to solve a problem. And to do that, you're going to have to get it away from your own negative animus, the Wicked Witch." Now, it may seem that these are unusual images. To what extent do they appear in religious life? So, just to answer that question, I put together this little group of images. And here is a gargoyle on a church, Paisley Abbey. Okay. Temple guardian, church guardian. Negative animus or anima. Here's another one. So why are these things on churches? What are they doing on churches? Here's another one on Notre Dame. I think it's Notre Dame, even though it says mausoleum there. Here at Rosalind Chapel, here's another one. They're all fierce looking, okay? And they don't just exist in the West. If we go to Japan, we have these kinds of guardians. These kinds of guardians are at the gates. These are sort of mythic looking animals here. Here's another one. This is a type of boar guardian, fierce guardian. Here's another guardian. Some sort of dog with horns. No one's ever seen a dog with horns, right? These are metaphysically existent. And here, if we actually look at the entrance to this temple in Japan, we see these guardians on the two sides. Right? You can't get into the temple until you go past the guardians. All right. So what are we going to see in the story when Dorothy goes to the castle of the Wicked Witch of the West? Castle is like a temple in a certain way, like the city of Oz is like a temple in a certain way. Guardians. Here's a close-up. You got to get past this guy in order to get in. He's not going to make it easy, right? Okay. So there's some examples of guardian figures out of traditional religion. Catholicism in the West, Buddhism in Japan in the East. Literally, across the world, guardians at the gates to the temple. Okay. So let me cue up. So we're now in the castle of the Wicked Witch of the West, and Dorothy's been abducted, and what does she say to the negative animus? "What are you going to do with my dog?" Remember what the dog is? The dog represents her instincts, her biological self, her organic self, okay? And the witch is going to what? Kill her, right? But Toto escapes. Okay, so Toto escapes. These are the guardian types, like the gargoyles, right? Who are walking around there. When Toto escapes, this is an indication of what? That the instinctual part of Dorothy has gotten away, has broken free, and is going to, in a certain way, rescue her from the negative animus. So, moving forward. So, what do we see happening now? They've been trapped. The guards are about to attack them. And Straw Man, who, what, has no brains, is going to think of this clever way to solve the problem of being attacked by the guards. Ultimately, they don't escape, of course, but he's thinking of a way to fight back. And so they're all being led by Straw Man all this time. They're being led by Straw Man. Okay, so the point is Straw Man has been leading them on the quest. He's developed the brain, right? That's his goal, is to get a brain, as you recall, right? And the quest itself is requiring that he develop a brain, which is to say that this function of Dorothy that he represents is developing through the quest. Now, what happens next is really interesting from the point of view of the broomstick, which is key, because that's what this piece of the quest is about, is gaining the broomstick. And how she gains it is really important. So let's watch this now.
Have you come back?
Okay, so very interesting. What happens here? The Wicked Witch traps them, right, with all her minions, the guards, the gargoyles, the temple guardians, and she's about to set Straw Man on fire with her broom. And what happens? Dorothy, through an act of love, to save Straw Man, through love, to save the straw man, ends up killing the witch. Now, the way the Jungians interpret this is the water is consciousness. Over and over again in religious symbolism, water represents expanded or increased consciousness. Like if you have a dream of a tidal wave, it's supposed to indicate something big coming in terms of the development of your own consciousness. It doesn't necessarily mean that you shouldn't go near the beach in Thailand or something like that. You know, it means something else. Through this act of love, saving the cognitive function, which is the straw man, Dorothy, the heroine of the story, is able to obtain the magical talisman, which is the broomstick. Okay. And as I said, the broomstick is really significant in all religious lore. From a Christian point of view, Jesus is suspended on a tree. In Norse legends, Odin is nailed to a tree. In Asia, Buddha is enlightened under a tree. The central point, the axis of the world, the power point, is always represented in this way. Well, it has some other representations, but this is a consistent representation. So what does it mean that she's been set this task by her negative animus to overcome her negative anima and achieve this talisman? Okay. Overcoming the negative, that's always the hero's journey to gain completeness, to gain their own power. So, they've brought the magical talisman back to the castle, to the center, to the land of Oz, or the city of Oz, rather, which is the broomstick. And as a result of that, what happens? The wizard gives each of these different functions, Tin Man, Straw Man, Cowardly Lion, what they've been seeking. And he's also about to give Dorothy what she's been seeking, which is the method to get back to home. So how does he do this? So he gives a diploma to the straw man and says, now you've got a brain because you got a diploma. He gives a clock shaped like a heart to the Tin Man and says, now you've got a heart. And he gives a medal to the lion and says, now you're courageous. Basically, these are all social totems. I mean, the message here is that what the heroine has lacked is what's been removed by society and by culture. And what the wizard does by setting the task to go to the castle and bring back the broomstick is to say, if you can do this, you will be healed. And the tokens that are given here are the reintegration with social values. Well, now you can parade down Main Street like a hero of the First World War. It's not like you lack any more of anything or have any more of anything than these soldiers did. In fact, you're wise enough to run away from danger. But, okay, we'll give you a medal. That's a social token that you have courage. Now you can believe that you have courage. And Straw Man, you could always think, obviously, because he got them out of all that danger in the castle. But the Straw Man still didn't think he could think until he was given the token of Doctor of Thinkology, which is to say, a diploma. Society says, you as a thinker. And the same for the Tin Man with his heart. Okay, so social reintegration is what's happening through this process. And Dorothy is now going to be taken back to Kansas on the balloon, except, of course, there is one little problem, which we won't have to talk about, really, because we know what happens. I mean, the balloon's about to take off. Toto runs away again. And as a result, Dorothy discovers her own power. The way Dorothy discovers her own power is Glenda the Good Witch says, well, you could always do this. The shoes were always on your feet. The power was always there. You just didn't believe it until now. In the same way as the Straw Man didn't believe he had a brain. In the same way as the Tin Man didn't believe he had a heart. In the same way as a lion didn't believe that he was courageous. Glenda says, just believe it, and you can do it, because you've always really had that capacity within yourself. You just had to go on the journey so you could believe it, and now you can go home, go back to the place that you were, to be the person you are, but with the knowledge of your own fullness and your own capacity. And the token for doing this, again, was the broomstick. That's what it was all about, achieving the broomstick. Which is, as I said, the tree, one of the major symbols in all religions. Buddha sits under the tree, he becomes enlightened. And because he's enlightened, he brings something to the world. Jesus hangs from the tree, and because of that, he's able to save humankind, etc., etc. And that will be our next theme, actually.